Good evening, I'm Paul Edwards from Miami, Florida, and I'd like to welcome you to Tuesday Topics. Tuesday Topics is the program where whichever of us folks gather here have the opportunity to discuss a particular topic that we've chosen the week before. I'd like to welcome those of you who are here and those of you who are listening. I'd like to thank Rachel and other folks for recording this evening, as well as to thank Dave Williams and his crew for the editing work that they do to turn this somewhat chaotic little exercise into a program that's usable. And obviously, we want to thank George Bies of Talking Communities for making the software available that allows us to do this broadcast. Some of you have probably already started hearing Christmas music. I think that we're soon going to be at the place where we start to play Christmas music on Labor Day. I'm convinced of that. But for the moment, the Christmas music signals an opportunity that all of us have for doing something that some of us love and some of us do not love, and that is shopping. Tonight, we're going to talk about shopping, some of the pros and cons of shopping for blind people, some of the advantages and disadvantages, perhaps looking at shopping using television, looking at shopping online, and looking at what you do when you actually physically go into a store in order to optimize the chances of getting what you need. So the topic this evening, then, is shopping. And I guess that I'd like to begin our discussion by talking a little bit about what folks' preferred method of shopping is, and perhaps start off by giving us some idea of some of the things that you either like or dislike about shopping, some of the things that you feel good about the way you do them, and perhaps even some of the things that you'd like to be able to do better. So, let me begin by indicating that we do have a fairly good crowd here this evening. We have Chris Ann from the Northeast. We have Tim and Cheryl Cummings from Boston. We have Cheryl Stewart from the state of Washington and Marlena Leiberg from the state of Washington as well. We have Rachel Bader from Florida. We have Christopher Maddox from Maine. And I'm sure that I'm forgetting lots of folks. We have Pam Drake from California. So there is a pretty wide cross-section of the United States represented. And, of course, we have Karen Idle from the great state of Texas. So let's see who'd like to start things off. And if I miss someone, I'll certainly get back to you. But thank you all for being here. And now let's see who wants to kick things off.
Well, since no one else has started, I'll start. Since I am the ultimate shopper, at least I think I am, this is Marlena, and I do online shopping, television shopping, and store shopping. I'm much more comfortable with television shopping and store shopping in terms of knowing that the gift that I'm getting or the thing I'm getting is what it really is. Online shopping, when I do that, I always have a tendency, if it's a gift for somebody else, to have it shipped to me first so that I can see it. And sometimes I actually keep it and buy another one and have that one shipped to the person. But I think online shopping relies so much upon pictures that I don't feel as comfortable. The television shopping I do is QVC, and the store shopping I do is any store that's open.
Hi, Marlena. Tim Cummings. Question for you. I can understand why you'd feel more comfortable with the store shopping. Why do you think you'd feel more comfortable with QVC? Although, I have watched QVC, and I'm kind of addicted to it, too. And although there are people, they're describing things. Do you feel comfortable enough with their descriptions to know that what you're buying is what you want?
Yeah, for the most part, I do. You know, it's been my experience that their descriptions, for the most part, are pretty outstanding and pretty true to what the thing is. Once in a while, I send something back, but I'm comfortable enough. And they also tend to carry, you know, the same sort of brands. I mean, Northern Nights, once you've seen a Northern Nights sheet, you know what it is, Denim & Company for clothing and that sort of thing. So I think that adds to my level of comfort.
This is Tim Cummings, and we do a lot of our shopping, and I guess we haven't really divided up shopping yet in terms of this discussion, but in terms of our grocery shopping, for example, we do most of that online now. We have Peapod here, and we like it very much. We used to have Home Runs, which actually we liked better, but Peapod is pretty good. But for our other kinds of shopping, we do a lot of online shopping, drugstore.com, Amazon.com, and just a tip for those of you who use Amazon, and I just found out about this recently through an article in Access World, Amazon.com does not only have a text-only site, which I've known about for a while, but they've got a stripped-down site, which is a lot less cluttered than their normal site, and it's amazon.com/access, and it's very nice because you don't get all the junk that you get on the regular Amazon site. And it seems like in the last couple of years, a lot of these sites have all tried to become more like Amazon. And Cheryl's creeping up on the mic here. She wants to say something.
Oh.
I'm going to go back a bit and ask Cheryl, and then perhaps ask some others to comment afterwards, on the art of choosing a personal shopper. Cheryl, you talked about one bad experience that you had with a personal shopper, but could you tell us a little bit about how you evaluate personal shoppers and what really makes a good personal shopper?
Okay. I think the first thing I do is sort of start with whether I'm interested in the store or not. And some of that goes from, you know, what you've heard about the store, also sort of talking with friends of mine to get a sense of if the clothing is the type of clothing I would enjoy wearing. For instance, I'm almost 40 now, and so therefore, although a few years ago I probably would have shopped at Gap, now I would hesitate a little bit because I know the clothes are sort of more aimed at somebody who is a little younger. I mean, excluding jeans and things like that. So, as I said, what I've done is I started off with whether the store is someplace I wanted to go to, and then as I've called and inquired about the personal shopper. Some of that, you know, just happens over the phone, whether the person is listening to you or are they trying to insist that, you know, they know best sort of what you should do. You know, I've talked to people who have sort of insisted that what I needed to do was to look at designer type clothing, and I've tried to tell them that my budget really doesn't afford that type of shopping. So that person, I'd probably just, you know, not make an appointment with the person. For me, as I said, the best experience has been someone who listens to me. We met. We sort of, she asked me about, you know, what do you like? What don't you like? And then she did sort of the color chart analysis, so telling me what types of colors she thought would look best on me. I, of course, sort of double-checked some of this by talking to my friends and asking them what did they think about some of these recommendations. And the other thing was the fact that the personal shoppers that I've worked best with are the ones who accept that I have a budget, and who are willing to work within that budget. And if I say that I'm really looking for a variety of outfits that I can mix and match when I go to my appointment with them, that's exactly what they've gathered for me. If that's not the case, then, you know, I'll follow through on the first appointment. I may purchase one thing, but I'm not going to make a follow-up appointment. So I hope that was helpful.
It actually was. Does someone else want to talk about personal shopping?
This is Shelley. I apologize for being late. I was doing an online order at a site that I like, and I thought, gosh, I've got to get in there and into Tuesday topics. And I thought if I minimized where I was and went back to the desktop and got up here, I would be fine. But I lost my entire shopping cart. But that's another story. Personal shopping is a whole new... This is new. You mean stores have personal shoppers and you can call and arrange to have someone... Is it shop for you or shop with you? Or this is new to me. I'm interested in this one. Does everyone have it or just the upscale stores?
I think all of the stores have it. Because if you think about it, nowadays they're all sort of connected. I mean, federated departments, which runs like Macy's, now they run Filene's, now they run Marshall Field's, and then some other group owns Target. So my friend, I have another friend, Liz, who is also legally blind. And when we think about going shopping, especially if we're talking about clothing, we always start off by calling the manager of the store. Macy's is one of the stores that I've done some shopping at, and if you call their if you call their information line, they actually have a department that says something like personal services. And what I learned that that actually means is that they do this one-on-one shopping with people, which is free, a courtesy that the store provides. But they also will help you like select gifts, but they do this for corporate entities also. Filene's does it. I think Target does it. And as I said, even if they don't have like an assigned personal shopper, if you talk with a manager for a store, they're usually quite willing to set up an appointment with you. I mean, hey, your money is green and they want a customer.
That is totally cool.
Hi, this is Chris Ann in Dearborn, Michigan. I was just wondering, Cheryl, if the personal shopper, do you make appointments with her when you want something? My grandmother used to do this kind of thing for a department store here, and she had a list of clients where she would have their preferences, and when something came in that she knew they might like or that happened to be on sale or something like that, she would at least notify them and say, you know, this is here, and I know this is the kind of, this is a designer or whatever that you often buy. And so does your personal shopper do that kind of thing, or is it just that you contact them when you're in the market for something?
The way I've set it up with the lady I use as my personal shopper right now is that I call her up and I say that, you know, I'd like to come into the store and I'm looking for something, and I tell her sort of what it is, and then I ask her, you know, when is she available for us to meet. I think I probably could set it up so that she could call me if something comes into the store that I like. But the truth is, I don't really want to shop that often. So, you know, twice a year, sort of a big shop, you know, in the winter. I have an appointment with her actually this coming Friday to get some winter stuff. And then probably in the spring, close to summer, I'll do another big shop because, you know, got to get ready for whatever's coming up for the summer. And that's sort of the way I work it at present.
One thing, this is Marlena, and I find using the personal shoppers is wonderful, but I also find that they tend to be in the higher-end stores. And so like you, Cheryl, you know, twice a year probably is what I do. But I wanted to say two things. I don't know how many people are aware. I just did this today. Target has, across the country, the first Tuesday in December is their quote-unquote holiday helper day. And they open their store early from 8 to 10 a.m. And you can go in, and Gary and I went in today, and we were literally swooped upon by all these wonderful people who gave us all kinds of coupons for discounts for things. And then they said, do you guys want a volunteer? And we said, yes. And this lady came and stayed with us for the whole 2 hours. And I, you know, got a bunch of little things bought there at Target. And it was great. Gary didn't have to figure out pushing the shopping cart with his wheelchair. I didn't have to figure out pulling it behind me with my dog. Gary didn't have to try to figure out what was where and read signs that are too high for him to see. So that's one thing. And the other thing is, on QVC, you can call a number, and they have shoppers, and those shoppers will comb through the database of stuff if you don't want to go online. You know, they'll comb through, look for whatever it is that you want, and they're very happy to sell it to you if you find it. So I just thought I'd toss that in for what it's worth.
Actually, probably we who are disabled need to encourage Target to do it more often by giving them some good publicity for having done this. I think it's something we'd probably like to see some other stores do. So perhaps someone like Marlena ought to write an article for the Braille Forum, perhaps, and talk a little about her experience and about, and maybe talk to Target and ask them what impelled them to make the decision to do this. I wanted to talk about mixing and matching a little bit, because it seems to me that we are tending to categorize a little bit, and I know that in my case, what I tend to do sometimes is, if I find a site where the form fields are not too wonderful, but that site has an 800 number, what I will tend to do is take a look for what I want to buy and then call the 800 number so that I can be sure that in fact it can be acquired quickly. And that kind of mixing and matching of approaches will often help. Obviously, you can look at stuff on QVC online and then order by their 800 number at any point that you want, or you can write down the item numbers when you're watching on television and then either call or go online and simply put in the item number and order so that it's actually a lot easier to do. I find that that ordering online overall is actually getting more and more reliable and actually much easier. My experience in the last month with Amazon, though, by the way, Debbie, is extremely strange. I don't know what's going on with that site, but it's just behaving absolutely ludicrously for me. It's when you click on something, it's taking you someplace entirely different. And I have no idea why that is. So they've not gotten some of the business that they might otherwise have gotten. We've talked some about personal shopping and about kind of in-person shopping. We've talked a little bit about QVC and other television-type shopping environments. Perhaps we could spend a little time talking about some of the pros and cons of online shopping. Rather than me hogging this, perhaps someone who does a fair amount of online shopping can talk about some of the good things and the bad things about that process, and perhaps some of the tricks of the trade.
Well, this is Shelley. First of all, I guess... got to know what you're doing, because in my case I thought I did, and I really thought I could hold that shopping cart minimized down on my taskbar. And when I went to ACB Radio, the whole website just went away. So now I have to go back and do that all over, and I had several items. And I wonder if, like, some websites, Amazon for one, seems so big and so it's overwhelming to me. I just cannot figure out what's what on Amazon, so I have never attempted it. Overstock.com is the same way. I just cannot figure out what is what there. I try and look for something, and I seem to find everything but what I'm looking for. I guess I have better luck with small, like, specialty sites rather than the really large ones. True, I do lose patience with it. You know, they keep trying to make it more attractive to light-dependent people, and they really make it tougher and tougher for us. Imagination, yeah, you got to have that, and patience, and I quite often I don't.
This is Rachel Lynn, and I can so relate to what Marlene is saying, having taught access technology. And, yeah, you're so right there. I think I'm not really generally a big shopper in any sense of the word. I mean, I'll shop for, I like to do it, but I don't go overboard and shop any one particular way very often. But one of the advantages of online shopping, and I did this, I don't know, several years ago for the first time. And one of the big advantages is you can go shop for your husband's Christmas present without having to go to the store and lose him for 20 minutes while you get somebody to help you out. So it's kind of fun. It really, I think, has allowed us as blind shoppers to have some degree of independence control over being able to shop. Not saying that we couldn't do it at a store, but to be totally independent, to be able to shop online, take the time where we're not feeling like we're wasting somebody's time or taking up somebody's time trying to make a decision. You know, we can go browse everything at our leisure, which is really kind of nice. And I do like to shop online for some things. I don't do it. It really depends on what I'm shopping for as to the method I use to shop. But online, CDs and that kind of thing, I'll purchase online some of the safer items. clothes I would be maybe a little more hesitant to do, given all the kinds of descriptions that you may or may not get.
Cool. I think that I think shopping online is interesting. I think the larger sites are probably actually fairly usable. I think that that some of them do have text only and some of them do have access kind of versions, and that's helpful. But what I found is there are a couple of rules of thumb that you can use in dealing with large sites. First, use your screen reader from the top of the page. And try to look for form fields. Don't mess with what the rest of the stuff is. If the form field that you come to first is a combo box, that's a great thing. Assuming that it works right, you open that combo box by turning form mode on. You go down until you've highlighted the particular kind of thing that you want to look at. And then, almost always, pretty close to that, is an edit field for searching. And you can put in more specifically what it is that you're looking for once you've determined the kind of item that you want to buy. And I've found that once you do that, it's actually pretty quick. The other thing that you can do if you're using a fairly recent version of JAWS is something that I do a lot. Once I've put that in, there's an awful lot usually at the top of an internet page that is repetition. And so what I tend to do is to hit the N key, which essentially says go past what you're doing right now until you get something that's different. And if you do the N key two or three times, you'll almost always get pretty close to where you want to be in terms of finding the descriptor or the description of what you searched for. So those are at least some tips for online shopping that work some for me. And obviously they don't always work, and these are generalizations. I wanted to ask folks who do online shopping to talk a little bit about shopping bots. I know I've found them pretty useful. I had only used one, and then saw a Consumer Reports document about a week ago that actually evaluated the top three. So perhaps some of you online shopaholics could talk a little bit about shopping bots for us.
Paul, I have to jump in here. This is Pam Drake in Visalia, California. I wanted to mention to you, and you said the magic word, JAWS. The problem appears to be with Amazon. It's been under discussion for a while that Amazon.com has re-engineered, reconfigured their site. They added a new option, I think. And what has happened is that this is a problem that JAWS users are having, where you click on a site and it's a link and it sends you over to Timbuktu someplace. This is a JAWS issue. People with window eyes say they do not have the problem. There's been a whole lot of threading on Blind Tech. I think Amazon is aware of the problem. Freedom Scientific is aware of the problem. They've been working on it. I don't know where it stands to this day because I don't do a lot of shopping on Amazon. I haven't really tried it. But what you might want to do, any of you having the problem, is get yourself a demo of Window Eyes and see if the problem is alleviated. I think, you know, those demos are there, and GW Micro, they're good guys. They probably, I'm sure they wouldn't mind if you used it, especially for that purpose. I haven't had any experience with bots, and I've had good experience with Shop, very good. In fact, I was doing it back in the Unix shell days of DOS. I'm pretty patient, which maybe helps a lot. But I do love online shopping.
Yeah, this is Marlena, and I just wanted to follow up also, Paul, for Window Eyes users, as I am one. What I find works best is when you bring up your page, the first thing Window Eyes is going to tell you is a summary of the page, that you got 357 links, 22 tables, and 96 headings, or whatever you've got. And so your T key will take you to tables, your H key will take you to headings, of course, and your C key will jump you by control. So I never read, except for once, you know, on a new site, just to kind of get used to it, I never read the top of that page. I just listen for the Window Eyes heading, the Window Eyes summary, and then I know what to push, either my T or my H, sometimes my C. But you're absolutely right that getting to the combo box, which is usually the categories of things for which you can search, sometimes the edit box will come first. And so if it does, you know, turn your browse mode off. We don't have forms mode. So your browse mode goes off with your enter key. You type in what it is you want. Then you go to that combo box. And just as you said, Paul, it really makes the search better. And I have not used bots, so I'm fascinated with this. I'll have to try it.
What are bots? Never heard of them.
Well, shopping bots, and I suspect that Marlena actually has. She may not just know the name. The one that I used all the time is, or that I use all the time, is Froogle, Froogle. And essentially what these are search engines that are specifically organized so that they will search the web for a particular product and present where those products can be found online. And they will organize the list in whatever way you tell them to. And I typically, obviously enough, organize my searches so that they go from the lowest price to the highest price, so that I'm going to take a look at the lowest prices first. And you'll get a number of hits that are eBay, but you'll also often get a number of hits that that are from pretty reputable websites which simply have the particular item that you want on special. To give you an example, about a month and a half ago, I have a BrailleNote PK and wanted a wireless card for it, but also wanted the 128 meg of additional memory that I could get on a particular card that was available, a SanDisk card. And that SanDisk card comes in a package that also has an adapter that allows you to use it with laptops, and it sells for $99. Using Frugal, I was able to find it at Overstock.com for $22.95, and who knows, they may still have some. So it's well worth doing if you have some time to play. One is Frugal. The other one that I heard about the other day but have not used is Yahoo Shopper, and there's a third one. Perhaps Marlena or someone else will be able to tell us what that particular one is. It is very, very convenient to use these bots. Again, you have to be a little patient, and you have to wade through some crud, and they do have advertising, which is one of the reasons why they're there, because they give people an opportunity to advertise the specific stuff that they sell.
First of all, I'm wondering, Paul, you're talking about the bots, and I did not recognize them by that name, but Price Grabber is another one that comes to mind. I don't know. I've never used it. I don't know if that's entirely electronic-based, or that is to say deals exclusively in electronics purchasing, but it is that's one that's quite well-known. Not to digress too much, but there are a couple of sites that I've just heard about recently, and I think there are more out there, but when you go to checkout, oftentimes you're asked for a promotion code or promotional code, and you say, oh, I don't have one of those, so you pay your full price. Well, there are two sites where you can get these that I know of. One is couponcabin.com. And the other one is, and yes it is, Naughty Codes, NAUGHTYCODES.com. So if you discover that there is a code available, you can look in on both of those sites, and I think they're categorized. I haven't really used them, but they sure do sound like they could be of great assistance. I've been shopping online for years, and I love it. I really do. And I do find that if I can't complete, and this does include Amazon, you can order online, and they'll help you thereafter. You do have to place your order. But I find that, for example, for gifts, I can't tell really what the wrapping paper is, what the gift wraps are. So I'll call their customer service, whose name escapes me at the moment, or number escapes me at the moment, and I will tell them that I have purchased whatever, whatever, and blah, blah, and they will go through and explain the wrappings to me, and there I can go ahead and use my, I can select my gift wraps with confidence. We're going to be going to Ventura, California this Christmas, and we're going to be taking the train. And there are going to be quite a few family members. So it's time for me to start looking around and thinking and purchasing and having those gifts shipped. I've not had bad experiences at all. I really haven't. Even with home shopping, I've not tried QVC. But I have found that the descriptions on home shopping have always been quite good for me. And I guess home shopping is now a part of QVC, but I've never had any problem with those approaches either. And in the store, I just try to find somebody who can work with me. We don't, as far as I know, we don't have personal shoppers here, nor do we have online supermarkets here, unfortunately. Our part of the country is, well, kind of homegrown. I mean, I don't think most of the people in our area, and it is a rather lower middle with the accent on lower income area. So I think the idea of to a lot of the folks, the culture just wouldn't support it. As far as getting somebody else to do shopping, you jump in the car and do it yourself. So I wish we had some of those features, but I will call one of our big stores just for the heck of it. Maybe they do have a personal shopper, and I just don't know about it. And this would be one of the higher-end stores.
I wanted to comment a little bit on some of the issues that Marlena raised, because I think that it actually brings us to a very interesting question. There are a number of sites out there that have demonstrated a real willingness to bend over backwards for blind folks. Amazon.com/access is a good example of that, sort of. My problem with the Access site is, yes, it's very uncluttered, it's very easy to use, but you don't get nearly as much information on the Access site about the particular stuff that you're looking at as you do on the site itself. And or at least you didn't the last time I was there, which was 6 or 8 months ago. So the sites that are specifically designed for use by people with disabilities, while they may be stripped down and they may be a little bit easier to understand, sometimes actually cause you to lose some of the richness of the website that's actually out there. And it's a price you've got to determine whether you're prepared to pay or not. But the second thing that I wanted to talk about is there is a site which actually sells coffee and is prepared to braille the coffee before they send it, so that you know exactly what you're getting and you've got braille labels already on the coffee. The problem with that site, at least for me, is that their prices are considerably higher than a number of other sites that are out there on the internet for buying coffee, and I buy a fair quantity of coffee. And so one of the questions that I guess this raises for me, and perhaps this is the last thing we'll be able to talk about tonight, is clearly we have an obligation to patronize those stores online that are particularly good to folks with disabilities. But do we have an obligation to patronize those stores if their prices are considerably higher than might be available in exchange for a service that we could perhaps do ourselves? I don't know the answer. I think it's a really difficult question to answer, and I'd be interested in some feedback.
Well, this is Shelley. I would think that it's not really a difficult question to answer because it's a personal opinion question. My opinion would be no, we are not obligated. They obviously are interested in their bottom line first, and that's why their prices are high. We, therefore, as individuals, most of us, we have to be interested in our own bottom line, and we have to, I think people are going to purchase what they want, well, within reason, or what they can afford. If you find that the convenience is, it's worth it, you know, you'd probably be willing to pay, especially if their coffee, in your opinion, was better than, say, you were getting it for $6 a pound, and it was truly better than the next site over where they didn't label it, but you got it for $4 a pound. Now, if the $4 coffee was just as good, I'd buy the $4 coffee. Who labels their coffee in Braille? I'm just curious. But I would say no, we're not obligated to patronize the store just because they're willing to do us a favor.
I know of two sites which will Braille. I know of two sites which will Braille the coffee. The one that Lois mentioned is coffeeam.com, and it's a very large site. It has a lot of other items in addition to coffee. The other is coffeeanyone.com. And I've bought from both of them. I really have not done a price comparison, but I think Coffee Anyone has maybe a little more variety now. Coffee Anyone, I think. Now, Coffee AM has a lot of specials. You know, you buy a particular something and you get a half pound of our featured whatever coffee. But I really have not, and maybe Coffee Anyone does, but I have not, they don't see a lot of specials with them. So on that basis alone, I'm guessing, I repeat guessing, that they're probably less expensive, and I have found them to be most helpful. I got a package of coffee from them, a pound of coffee that the same, one of the same blends I usually get, and I called them up and I said, you know, this is pretty weak this time. It felt like they forgot to grind it. Not quite, but it was pretty lame. And but they very kindly sent me another pound of coffee. They asked me a couple questions. Is this the one you usually drink? Yes. You know, they did ask me a few things. And they did send me the coffee. And I wouldn't do that every day. And it turned out that after a few pots, go figure, the other didn't seem quite so bad. So I'm thinking I may call them up and say, oh, go ahead, charge me for that. But they did. They sent me a pound, an extra pound.
Hi, this is Steve. I'm a newcomer to the group, but I think I've got to join the general consensus in terms of I don't think that I would buy something specifically from a manufacturer who was appealing to the blind or visually impaired if the cost was extra. Frankly, I think it's a wise manufacturer or retailer is going to appeal to our population as part of their marketing pitch. I mean, it's in their best interest to create some kind of an edge so that if things are comparably priced, I might choose the label that I'm able to read or the label that is done in Braille or someone who's willing to accommodate if the prices are the same.
Hi, this is Tim Cummings, and I want to just make a couple of points on something that were mentioned earlier and then get back to this point. Pam, I definitely am in spirit with you because I used to shop in the days of links, using links to shop on Amazon and things like that. The other thing in terms of tips, the other great feature that both Window Eyes and Jaws has that has helped us very much is the links list box. It is wonderful, particularly in grocery shopping. Now let me turn Paul's question on its head a little bit. And this is the other interesting flip side of that question is, would you shop at a website that is inaccessible even if you really liked the product there? Now, there are some purists who would say, you know, we won't shop at any site that's not accessible, it's discriminatory, blah, blah, blah. But I have to say, I have broken this rule, and there's one case, and I want to just tell the story to the links that I went to. Anyone who has stayed at any of the DoubleTree hotels knows that when you stay at a DoubleTree hotel, they give you free chocolate chip cookies when you come into the hotel, and these cookies are made by a company in Tennessee called Christie Cookies. And Cheryl and I were at a DoubleTree, and I love these cookies so much that we went home and we got on their site, and it took us 3 hours. It was the worst site we've ever been on. They had no alt tags at all on any of their links. It was terrible, and we tried to go through the ordering process, and it was a total nightmare. We finally got their 800 number, and we were able to call them up and get some cookies. But I was so, I loved their stuff so much that I said, well, let me, you know, send them a note. And I sent them a note. I'm, you know, one of the things I do in my spare time is I'm a webmaster. I was a webmaster for two sites, and I'm a webmaster one. So I'm a little familiar with accessibility. So I sent them their main page, as it was, in HTML, and then I recoded it to show how they could do it to make it more accessible. and I sent them a very nice note and never heard anything back from them. And my guess is that probably they got somebody, you know, they got some web designer or contractor to you know, fix up the site, and, you know, they haven't changed it much since. Now, I still do shop there once in a while because I love their cookies, and I'll call their 800 number and order that way. And some people would say, you know, well, you know, you're not being true to your fellow brothers and sisters, blah, 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 blah. But I love their stuff. But, I mean, that's kind of the flip side of Paul's question is, you know, do you shop at a place that is inaccessible? And I think, you know, like everyone else has said, it is a personal choice. So I just figured I'd throw that in for discussion.
Hi, it's Debbie. And I guess the answer to Paul's question, my answer, and to what you just said, Tim, is probably the same answer to both. And that is that there's probably, for me, a balance somewhere between how much do I love the product? Is there something that a company does that makes that product extra favorable to me versus somebody else? I mean, does one of them taste better? Does one of them smell better? Do I like the amount that I get, the quantity and the quality? But then it also comes down to what is my rapport? What kind of feedback do I get from them? Do I get helpfulness from them either over the phone or in email? Do I feel like customer service is important to them? And how much energy does it take? If it's going to take too much energy for me to deal with them and their internet site, and I don't feel like I get decent customer service from them, then you know, then I'm probably not going to bother, and I'm probably not going to bother to pay more if the rapport isn't there or if somehow it takes too much energy. If I feel like there's some kind of a way that there's a personal relationship or a personal rapport that starts up that makes me feel magnetically drawn to them and their product, then I might pay more. But not just to have access, not just unless I really like them so much. But again, it's that personal feeling of liking them or some sort of a rapport that would make me say, hey, this is worth it. I will go ahead and pay a little bit more for something that I really want and believe in.
Well, I think we are actually getting to the place where it's time to wind our program down. I'd like to echo something as kind of my final thought that was said earlier, but perhaps wasn't said as unequivocally as we should probably be saying it. Blind people have the opportunity now to explore products before buying them to a degree that they have never had in the past. And I think that we need to recognize that if we're prepared to take the time and trouble to do some research and to do some work, we truly are, perhaps for the first time in history, able not only to save some money by finding the least expensive products, but also are able to take a look at reviews of products in order to establish whether they're good, bad, or indifferent, listen to samples of CDs that we never used to be able to, have a range of access components that are a part of our shopping that the online experience gives us. I think our program this evening has demonstrated that whether you shop locally in a store, whether you shop using 800 numbers, mail order programs, or online, there are a range of options that are available for people who are blind that can make the experience of shopping a far easier and more appropriate kind of operation than it's typically been in the past. Is shopping perfect? Absolutely not. Are there still sites that make you absolutely crazy? No question. But if we think carefully about how far we've come in the last 10 years since the advent of the Internet, I think that all of us would agree that shopping for people who are blind in the year 2005 is far superior to shopping as a person who was blind in 1995. Thanks to all who participated in our program tonight. I think our discussion was exciting and good. Thanks to those of you who listened to our program on ACB Radio's Mainstream. Now, it just remains for us to go out and shop, as Marlena would say, until we drop. Thanks for listening. Good night. And remember to stay tuned to ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community.
Now I'm going to go back and try and redo my shopping cart at the site where I was.
Shelley, next time that happens, you can have Internet Explorer open more than once. So the next time that happens, instead of trying to minimize your thing, which is a pretty visual thing to do, just go to Internet Explorer and open another instance of it and go to your ACB radio site.
I can't think of anything more frustrating than having your shopping cart with the stuff in it, and then you go into another another place, and then you end up losing the shopping cart with all its content.
Okay, a shortcut for that is Control N. It'll say new browser window. And then it'll just, you know, all you have to do is type in the address that you're moving over to. And once you have both of them up there, you do Alt-Tab back and forth. And you can be sitting in the room working on your shopping cart while you're in this room.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think I've probably done that before. Before I came here tonight, I went to Panasonic website because they say they're dedicated to making things more accessible for us, but they have a DVD recorder and with a hard drive, 100 gigabytes for around $400. But I was on one of these PC audio that says it cost for the thing that they were talking about, the 400 thing cost something like $1,000 or $2,000. That's a bit high on my. That's not high on my agenda, but it's high in price.
Guys, let's not get sidetracked. We need a topic for next week, please.
I would be interested if. I know you've got to get to the topic, Paul, but I'd be interested if Tim could give us the spelling of Christie's. And also, Gary, if you want me to explain that a little bit more about the buying codes, I can do that after we set the topic, and then I'll go get off and start fixing our dinner, or finish fixing our dinner.
Tim, go for it if you want. Just spell it real fast, and then we'll get back to the topic choice.
Sure. It's Christie. Wait a minute. I'm looking up in my Braille and speak here. Okay. Christie. Christie Cookies, and I think it's christiecookie.com is the website, but they do have an 800 number, Pam, which I can give you afterwards if you're interested. So anyway, go ahead, Paul.
Cool. So we need a suggestion for a topic for next week, please.
Christmas. How do we, as blind people, celebrate Christmas? That'd be an interesting topic.
Karen, the problem is I don't know that at this point we can have any assurance that this program will end up being aired before Christmas. So I'm not jumping up and down for trying to choose one on Christmas, though it's certainly an interesting topic. I'm not sure that blind people celebrate it differently enough to fill up an hour and a half program, but maybe they do.
Yeah, it seems like, Paul, they've been a few weeks late on some of this stuff. I mean, this week they're talking about this business of the blindisms or the things we talked about a few weeks ago.
Yeah, so I think we're going to have to not be so time-specific. I mean, what we did tonight in terms of shopping was not to tie it very closely to holiday stuff, except in a couple of instances, and I think they were worthwhile ones. So thanks for the idea, Karen. One of these weeks we will actually choose one of yours.
I don't know when, but that's fine. No, that you'd probably be right. I was just throwing something out there. Give it back to me.
Well, since nobody has mentioned anything yet, how about anything to do with access technology these days, or have we crossed that bridge before?
This is Cheryl, and I was thinking maybe about the whole issue of travel. Sort of following from this, we purchase tickets online to use the, you know, go from Boston to Denver or whatever, and it asks us to indicate whether you will need assistance or not, which we do. And we indicate, you know, we do because we're blind. And then you get to the airport, and it doesn't matter because it doesn't seem as if the ticket has any influence on the type of service you receive. They're just as flustered as ever that you've shown up. And, you know, it feels like they're sort of running from here to there, like, what do we do? What do we do? How do we help you? And so I'm just tossing that up.
We've actually talked a few times about travel in the past year. There might be enough. There might be enough to do a whole topic, though, on requesting assistance. Period. You know, that might apply to shopping, and it might apply to travel. It might apply. It might apply to being online. It might apply to working with governments and so on. So requesting assistance might be a topic that we could use. Other suggestions?
I don't want to switch it from travel to just general requesting assistance.
Yeah, we could probably extend that topic up to assistance in general. We have done a couple travel shows in the past, but no, that's, and we've also done one on getting help and responding to help and customer service and the like. But yeah, we might be able to take we may need to let it be sort of freewheeling, but it sounds like I could go for that.
Okay. Any other suggestions? We seem to be approaching consensus here.
I'd vote for it. We could also include gracious ways or methods for declining assistance that isn't needed.
Yeah, Cheryl and I vote yes.
I vote yes.
I vote yes.
I vote yes.
So do I. We have our topic.
It's anonymous.
Absolutely, it's anonymous. Are you still recording, Miss Rachel?
Yep.
Okay, let's try to do a promo in 20 seconds. Next week on Tuesday Topics, we will explore the fine art of requesting assistance. Is there a good way to do it and a bad way to do it? What if you don't want assistance at all and you're given it anyway? And how should you respond if somebody bends over backwards to provide assistance? Are there rules of thumb that operate in terms of how we should compensate people who may provide transportation for us or who may volunteer to work with us? How, in general, then, should blind people respond to requesting assistance and receiving it? Join us next week for Tuesday Topics, when assistance will be our issue, on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community.